This is the parable of the Good Samaritan, found in Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37, exposition by Robert C. Newman. This parable is one of a group which are unique to Luke and are often called sample parables or paradigm parables or illustrative parables. Such a parable provides a sample of the attitudes or actions which we're to copy or to avoid. This is in contrast to the more usual, what we might call translation parables, in which an earthly story functions as an analogy for a heavenly story or a heavenly meaning. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning was the old way of characterizing these standard parables. But these are sample, this is a sample parable. Some other sample parables: the rich fool in Luke 12, verses 16 through 21, which deals with the matters of death and wealth and where's our security come from, and the places of honor in Luke 14, 8 through 11, which deals with matters of selfishness and looking out for number one. Illustrative parable, sample parable given on the same occasion in Luke 14, 12 through 14, where Jesus gives advice to the guests at the banquet, to the, I guess, the host at the banquet on whom to invite to things like this, and gives lessons on kindness and selfless generosity. The parable of the rich man and Lazarus is also, I believe, a parable and falls in this category, sample parables. That's found in Luke 16, verses 19 through 31, and gives us a sample of what happens after death and a lesson concerning concern for the lost. And finally, the Pharisee and the tax collector in Luke 18, 10 through 14, gives us some lessons on pride and self-righteousness and what constitutes salvation, or what leads to salvation, if you like. Well, we're going to be looking at this sample parable of the Good Samaritan. First of all, you look at the text, and that'll take up about three panels. Luke chapter 10, verse 25 and following. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind." Quotation from Deuteronomy 6:5, and "love your neighbor as yourself." Quotation from Leviticus 19:18. "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Starting in Luke 10:30 and following. In reply, Jesus said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, where he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, took him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 silver coins, 2 denarii, and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I'll reimburse you for any extra expense you may have.'" Then in Luke 10:36 and following, Jesus says, "Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." Well, a little bit about the context here. This parable is given in response to the legal expert's question, "Who is my neighbor?" And the legal expert had previously asked Jesus what to do to inherit eternal life. And Jesus had then led the expert to answer his own question by means of a summary of the Old Testament law and the 2 great commandments. Love your God, Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Well, let's think first of all about the parable's story, and then we'll come back and see about what the parable is teaching. First of all, the traveler attacked. A man is traveling down the Jericho Road, and this is the usual route from Jerusalem to both Perea, across the Jordan, and going up the Jordan and coming back up into the hill country to Galilee. So, usual route. But the road is dangerous to travel alone. It's isolated. There are really no villages or anything on the wilderness section of this road. And it is troubled by robbers. Well, the fellow is traveling alone. In any case, he's attacked, robbed, beaten, left for dead. Though, in fact, he still barely survives. Two men come along singly, a priest and a Levite. The priest, the fellow who was in charge of the sacrifices and such at the temple, and who, in this case, probably lived away from Jerusalem and was perhaps going home after a service. Jerusalem is going down. Levite, an attendant who assisted the priests in the temple. These two men come along singly, but each passes the fellow by without helping him. They're probably in a hurry, as otherwise they would not be traveling alone either. There's, of course, some danger in stopping to help. Who knows where the robbers are right now? And maybe this guy even is a decoy for the robbers. And if you stop and start helping him, the robbers will come out and attack you. This priest and Levite may have some other rationalizations as well. What might they be? Well, they may be reasoning that they have service responsibilities of one sort or another. We're not sure which way the Levite is traveling. We're told of the priest that he's going down from Jerusalem. It's a very long descent from the hill hills just east of Jerusalem down to Jericho. And so he's going off duty, but the other Levite might conceivably be headed for the temple with service responsibilities. They may be concerned about the matter of holiness or ritual cleanliness. Touching a dead body would certainly make them unclean. I don't believe it would make them unclean to touch someone who is dying but not dead. So they may have had some concerns about that. And they may have rationalized that someone else will come along and help. But the man will surely die if not helped. And these two would be the most likely people coming by to do so. They are fellow Jews. Where's this other fellow in a moment? We're going to see it's a Samaritan, not a Jew. And these guys are also those who are specially involved in religious work. Not what we would probably call full-time professionals. The ones who did that presumably stayed at the temple pretty well all the time. But these would be the guys who shuttled in and out for their week stint twice a year. But in any case, especially involved in religious work, so especially concerned, if you like, about the welfare of people. That brings us to the Samaritan. Samaritans were a group that was considered half-Jewish by the Jews. They were the people who had been part of the northern 10 tribes, but who had been intermarried with Gentiles who had come into the area. And they followed a version of Judaism that was felt to be rather unsatisfactory for various reasons, and I think I could probably agree with the priest and Levite on that anyway. And so they were really not well regarded in Judea, and besides that, there was a strong enmity between them, such as the kind of enmity that has existed at time between Catholics and Protestants, or say particularly in Northern Ireland, something like that, huh? So only Samaritan stops to help, yet he has better reasons than they do for not helping. He is, after all, helping someone he doesn't know from a hostile ethnic group. And he is endangering himself, perhaps even more than the priest or Levite. We don't know much about clothing styles at this period, whether the Samaritan would have dressed in a way that the average Jew could tell he's a Samaritan, whether the priest and Levites would have dressed in ways that you could tell so-and-so was a priest or so-and-so was a Levite. We're not talking about their on-duty clothing here or something. So it's possible that he was endangering himself even more, since perhaps the robbers would be more inclined to jump on him than a priest or Levite. he gives up considerable time and money, as we will see here. He spends perhaps an hour or so getting this guy repaired, and then takes him on his donkey to a nearby inn and such, and that may have been the direction he was heading already, so it may not be that way much out, and then obviously pays for the putting the guy up, etc. So, that's the story. What's the teaching of this parable? Well, Jesus is answering the lawyer who asked the question, who's my neighbor? And Jesus' answer, given in this parable, is that anyone you come in contact with that you can help is your neighbor. So the Samaritan came in contact with this wounded Jew and dying Jew, and being in contact with him and realizing that he could help him, he did. Huh? The real question, and Jesus often does this sort of thing, turns the person he's encountered's question into a somewhat different question that was more important. The real question is not, who is my neighbor, but who am I going to be a neighbor to? Jesus also shows the lawyer and us something about how to go about this. So let's have a look at that. How do we go about being a neighbor to those that we come in contact with who need our help? Well, first of all, you need compassion. Contrast the Samaritan with the priest and the Levite. The Samaritan had compassion on this fellow who was lying there, had pity on this fellow who was lying there. The priest and the Levite apparently didn't. Now, we can't rule that the Samaritan's compassion was perfect, or the priest and the Levite said no compassion, but the priest and the Levite didn't have enough compassion to do anything about it, and the Samaritan did. Compassion, pity, is what caused the Samaritan to get involved. Secondly, you need to take risks. Surely, one of the main reasons the priest and the Levite didn't do anything was that they were unwilling to take the risk that was involved here. But the Samaritan's pity or compassion was strong enough to overcome his fear, and so he takes the risk. There's a possibility that he might be attacked while being there. So you need compassion, you need to take risks. Furthermore, you need to spend some time. Perhaps the priest and the Levite were in a hurry. The priest, at least, as we learn from Jesus' remark about going down, was not headed for work, but perhaps he was in a hurry to get home. And his desire to get home caused him not to do anything to help. The Samaritan's compassion was strong enough to take the time needed. So, you need compassion, you need to take risks, you need to spend some time. You need to spend some money. The Samaritan provide the bandaging and the oil and the wine for the wounds with some materials, and then he paid for a night's lodging for himself and the wounded man. We don't know whether that was more expensive than just for himself, but I suspect it was. And then he provided the innkeeper with 2 denarii, 2 silver coins is the NIV there, 2 days' wages for common labor at that time. So not trivial, perhaps something like $50 or so in today's money, or for a motel today, maybe even twice that for 2 days' lodging, if you like. And then he gave authorization for the innkeeper to spend more. So you need to spend some money. So, you need compassion, you need to take risks, you need to spend some time, you need to spend some money. The Samaritan met the need. Presumably, the stranger didn't die. Jesus does not go on with the story to tell us that he survived or that he didn't. But, take the worst case, suppose the stranger did die. Still, the Samaritan did the right thing. And the Lord will reward that one day. We will do lots of things in this life that seem futile, but if they're the right thing to do, the Lord will reward that one day. The stranger surely would have died if he was left untreated in the Judean wilderness, and the Samaritan was not willing to assume that somebody else would help him out. And since these two guys, the Levite and the priest, didn't help him out, it seems unlikely that anyone else would have. Now, the Samaritan did more than meet the need. He actually involved others as well. He helped the innkeeper, whom he apparently knew, to get involved in helping this guy as well. So, you need compassion, you need to take risks, you need to spend some time, you need to spend some money, you need to meet the need, the way the Samaritan did, and it's often nice to involve others as well. We might say one more thing about how to go about it. The Samaritan appears to have been thrifty. Some people treat thrift as though it is just stinginess, and sometimes it is, but sometimes it's not. It looks like the 2 denarii, the 2 coins he gave the innkeeper, was the Samaritan's estimate on what he's needed to get the stranger back in shape to leave the inn. But he's willing to put up more, but he lets the innkeeper take the initiative here. He apparently feels that the innkeeper is worthy of trust. Almost get the impression that perhaps the Samaritan is a traveling businessman of some sort and has been by here regularly, and so he and the innkeeper know each other. So the Samaritan appears to have been thrifty. That's an interesting feature of what we might call holiness in one way or another. Compare Jesus. Jesus has fed the 5,000, he's fed the 4,000, and yet he has the disciples gather up the leftovers after feeding them. And this may, of course, have been a concern for the environment, except all the leftovers are edible in one way or another, and wild animals, and, birds, etc., would certainly have eaten this stuff up if it was left there. So I think it's perhaps more of thrift, and in fact the gospel writers tell us how many baskets were picked up after this, so that even though Jesus could turn water into wine and multiply the loaves and the fishes, he still did not waste any of it. An important lesson, I think, for at least the U.S. federal government, and probably most governments in the world, that in doing a charity, which is a good thing for them to do, they often are very wasteful, and humans can be this as well. Well, that's kind of a quick tour of how to go about it, and to recap them, you need compassion, you need to take risks, you need to spend some time, you need to spend some money, you need to meet the need, it's nice to involve others, and it's good to be thrifty, because then you may be able to help more people. Lessons for us. Well, Jesus gives the lesson for us that he gave to the lawyer. Go and do likewise. What does he mean there? He means that we should help people who are in distress. Which people should we help? We can't help everybody. No, we can't. We can help those we come across, okay? And we obviously are violating the spirit of this if we try to avoid meeting people or stay away from people where people might be, stay away from places where people might be in distress. We're to help people who are in distress physically, and that was certainly the case here in the parable of Good Samaritan, but there may also be people who are in emotional distress who may be helping one way or another. Or help in intellectual distress. One of my concerns over my career has been to try and help people who have had intellectual problems for the truth of Christianity raised for them, and to try and answer some of the intellectual questions there. We can help people who are in spiritual distress. They perhaps are feeling badly about something they shouldn't feel badly about. Or perhaps they're not feeling badly about something they should feel badly about in the whole spiritual realm. Go and do likewise. Help people who are in distress. Expect it to involve danger, time, and money. A lot of it may not involve much danger, but some of it may, and all of it will involve some. And remember, it will be worth it all when we see Jesus. Well, that's the end of this quick exposition of the Good Samaritan. And my prayer, my desire is that may we too be good Samaritans. Thank you very much for your attention.